A listening culture is at the heart of the Co-op vision to be fairer for your colleagues. But what does this mean in practice? Hello, I'm Fiona Coleman, your host for this Co-op Leadership Skills podcast series. In this series of four podcasts, we dig deeper into the act of cooperative listening and its impact on you, your colleagues, and on the Co-op vision, cooperating for a fairer world. Welcome to our fourth episode, where we are discussing the final step of the Co-op listening framework, propose. Here, our focus is on ideation, involving and empowering others, and together defining and agreeing next steps. We are joined once again by some of your colleagues.
Hello, my name is Katie Brown. I'm a head of delivery in our transformation team.
My name is Kenyatta Nelson. I am the chief member and customer officer at the Co-op.
Hi, I'm Rob Kesterton. I lead the transformation design team in the transformation function.
My name is Mike Pengelly, and I am the head of operations for the funeral care business in the south of the UK.
We hear in published research that organisations that regularly listen and act on employee feedback are three times as likely to meet or exceed their targets. Closer to home, from the 2022 TalkBack survey, we know that listening and taking action is the second biggest driver of colleague engagement. Yet we also hear that only 56% of colleagues feel confident that feedback from TalkBack will be listened to and acted on, which is down 6% on 2021. It is this feeling of low confidence around action that the final step of the cooperative listening framework seeks to address. Here, we are talking about co-creating a generative way forward, where we involve and empower colleagues and get to clarity about why particular decisions are made and what action, if any, will follow. For you, what is the most important outcome when you've taken the time to speak to someone about a topic that really matters to you?
The most important outcome for me, once you've had time to share the conversation, is that there is some level of action on the back of it. I really love an outcome when I go in, because I'm a human being with a preconception of this is how it's going to be, this is kind of where I want the conversation to go. The conversation goes somewhere else, but it's about a better outcome than I had in the first place. Amazing.
So this is an interesting one. I think the outcome of a shared point of view or perspective in terms of what a successful outcome looks like, in my view, is broadly dependent upon the nature of that engagement. But for me, clarifying up front, what does success look like? I know that sounds very formal, but I do think a version of that is important, because then it sets up the stage for what success looks like at the end. Because if this is just about getting my view, here's the thing, Kenyatta, I just wanted your view on it, then success is you have my view, done. If this is about a decision, then success looks like either getting to a decision or understanding what else we need to get a more informed view. So for me, there is a really important beginning and end to conversations that if we get more intentional about, the nature of the middle, I think will improve as a result, because we're clear on what we're talking about and why we're talking about it.
So in your view, what's the impact on you, others, a relationship, the business, when you perceive a lack of action on a topic you've spoken about?
I think when there's a lack of action on a topic that's really important to me, it creates a lack of trust, because I think it's very easy then to equate the listening back to lip service. So that action doesn't necessarily mean that the conversation needs to be, you know, that somebody's taking that forward and saying, yes, you were right, and we need to do something about it, because, you know, we don't live in an ideal world, and there are lots we could be doing and things that we need to prioritize. So it isn't always practically possible that something you're very passionate about can be turned into positive action. But if it can't, it still requires an action. So it still requires that loop to be closed and for an explanation to be given as to why that can't be taken forward.
When I perceive there's a lack of action about a topic that I've spoken about, either by the organization or by an individual, especially if it happens often, you can't help but feel as if your opinion isn't valued and isn't important. and ultimately is being ignored. And if you continue to feel ignored, you either stop contributing at all, or perhaps if you're somebody a bit more like my personality, you become quite disruptive. That's where I go to if I feel as if I'm not being listened to, not being appreciated, and not being heard.
Well, that question resonates. When there is perceived lack of action on a topic, I think that it leads to enormous frustration in the organization and for the people involved in that discussion.
If there's a lack of action on something that I've been talking about with someone, I feel that's frustration, time wasted. We could have been using that to a better purpose. And for me, in modern living, work, it can be 100 miles an hour at time. Those times are important because you don't get that back. And you could have used that time better to get to a much better conversation that gives a much better outcome. So I think it's one of frustration, really.
As we've heard, getting to action is important, and the flow of the cooperative listening framework is such that it guides us to action. From building common intent as we connect, co-sensing and letting go of old beliefs and mindsets as we invite open dialogue, connecting to purpose, being fully present and curious as we observe and acknowledge the person and what they've shared, to finally moving to decisions about new possibilities and co-creating as we propose ways forward. For many of us, making decisions can be challenging, yet the opportunity presented through applying the listening framework is that decision making becomes easier because we've engaged with our stakeholders, we've taken the time to deepen our empathy and understanding, and we've opened ourselves and our systems to new possibilities. To aid with the process of decision making, there are a number of tools and frameworks available. You may have a preferred one. Whatever it is, though, it's important to be explicit about how decisions will be made and to share this process with the interested stakeholders. This helps to avoid unclear expectations. It's also vital to provide timely and clear communication of the decision itself. What is it and why it was made? Both will help minimise confusion and disappointment. Communicating decisions confidently and with clarity is crucial. So I wonder, when it comes to sharing decisions, is it better to have a yes, a no, or a maybe?
I think it's dangerous to stick in maybe for too long because we can procrastinate in that space. I think yes and no is equal depending on what you're going to decide in truth. But maybe can be good if it slows you down to get a better answer in the longer term than a short-term kind of silo answer. So a really complex answer to a quite straightforward question.
So the reason why prioritization is a skill that needs to be learned in practice is because it's far easier to say yes. I heard someone say this to me a long time ago. The quality of your life will improve in line with your ability to have difficult conversations. And part of that is a person's ability and willingness to say no. Saying yes is easy. Actually, doing what you committed to do then becomes much more difficult. Yes is a very expensive thing to say. And no might be painful in the moment, but it will save a person, an organization, an operation significantly more in the long run. The challenge is picking which things to say yes or no to.
I think it's just better to have an answer. I don't know that it can always be yes. And if it was always no, then that would be probably quite demoralizing. But I think you need an answer.
It's better to have a yes or a no. A maybe, I think, requires further unpacking. So I don't think you should leave the conversation with a maybe. You should leave the conversation with a yes or a no. So turn the maybe into a yes, if, or a no, but.
You make some good points. And although we like a yes, sometimes a no is the right and necessary decision.
Yeah, absolutely. I think no is good. There are times where we've been looking at future strategy stuff now in our business, and we want to get from A to Z, but there's all those other letters of the alphabet. You've got to navigate your way through first. And so it's no, we're not going to get there in the time frame that we thought we were. And actually, no, this is a bad decision what we're going to do. So we may need to go A to Y, back to D, up to Z in the long run. But the kind of squiggly way of getting there, the natural path as we've played it out, it's not going to work. So saying no I think is good in those instances.
Well, you know what? Just on that point, and I think a lot of organizations get this wrong. When we say yes to something, we have to say no to something else. My view is that a lot of organizations, quite rightfully, would view that as zero sum. So I've said yes to X, which means I have to say no to Y. But I think what more often happens in organizations is we say yes to X and we say yes to Y. And what we say no to actually is not a thing, but the successful execution of either of them. So we're not saying no to the thing, we're saying no to doing any of it well. In our ability to not make a choice, we have made a choice, but the choice we've made is not a choice of options, it's a choice in quality of execution. And I think that's some organizations miss that point for sure.
Thanks. So now for a little bit of self-reflection. If we know that sometimes it will be a yes and at other times it will be a no, which for you is easier to say?
It's easier for me to say yes. I think it's common for people not to want to let other people down. So therefore, I think it's easier to say yes, perhaps even if sometimes you really want to say no.
I think for me as a human being, it's definitely easier for me to say yes. And that's always been a little bit of an Achilles heel for me. So I do find it difficult to say no. And I naturally, as do most people, try and make the yeses as many as I can as possible. But that's quite dangerous sometimes. And I do think where you have to have difficult conversations when it's a difficult no, there is a real appreciation generally from those people you're talking to. If you can, again, give time to the conversation, be honest and open and comfortable in being slightly uncomfortable in that moment as well. Sometimes that's something we all have to do. I do think colleagues appreciate that honesty. And for me, that honesty is the most important thing. What I would never want to do is to be dishonestly saying yes or diluting something to be able to say yes when really the right answer is no. So it's very tricky. I think it's very tricky.
I find it easier to say yes, in truth, because my DNA is made up of positivity. So I like to be positive. I like to be in a place that is in agreement that we can get somewhere. The watch out is that there's danger in that because we move too quickly and we don't allow the conversation to fully play out, which I'm acutely aware of. Yeah.
I mean, personally, in the moment, it's always easier to say yes. And to be fair, saying no is still something that I have to consciously think about every day. And so I have to be very mindful of where and when I commit my time and energies, particularly as a person who is new in a job and in an organization. It becomes almost a gravitational pull to engage and involve yourself in damn near everything. And very quickly, you find that you just can't. You just literally do not have the capacity to do so. Something's going to give. And oftentimes, what starts to give first has nothing to do with work. And that's when you really have to kind of sort of say, for all of us, say, okay, I need to set some clear boundaries here. And I think as leaders of an organization, getting people focused on the biggest and most important things is critically important. But that requires saying no to a lot of things. So I am very much a work in progress in that context.
In design thinking methodology, once a need has been defined and a decision made to pursue a solution, the next step is to embark on a second stage of divergent thinking, ideating and considering potential solutions. After this, the move is to delivery, proposing and co-creating the way forward and adapting through experimentation, action inquiry and prototyping. This point of the process requires its own rigour. Often, organizations, teams, and individuals fail to convert great ideas into action because of the way they follow through, or not, on the decisions which are made. Being clear about who does what, by when, and how the action is assessed and followed up is important to avoid confusion and to support the desired increase in confidence that agreed-upon actions will be taken. What, in your experience, are the pitfalls when we move from ideation to action?
I think the pitfalls of moving from ideation to action are often wound into the action itself. So in our kind of haste to do something. We can start to overlook the process of ideation and the richness of the process that we went through. So somehow we have to make sure that we don't lose the essence of that ideation. And again, back to the point that the circle has to be closed. If when you come to action, something isn't practically possible, then go back and acknowledge that that was part of the conversation and this is why that can't be taken forward. So, you know, that richness can become quite diluted sometimes in how we have to take action. So we've got to keep a track of where the conversation started. Otherwise, we lose the essence of what we were seeking to achieve.
Listening to others to generate ideas for action is fantastic. But I think there's a real importance and an obligation to turn that listening into actions and outcomes. I think and along the way, it's really important to continue to check in and to check back with those who provided the input in the first place. Ideally, to empower and enable those to take the action, because I think that's the most important. You know, to actually, you know, to listen to somebody and then to enable and empower them to take the action themselves. But if that isn't the case, continuing to kind of, you know, hold their hand through delivery of the actions, just to A, keep in communication so they know that their ideas have been listened to and are being taken into account and are resulting in some action. But B, and also to make sure that the actions that you're taking remain relevant to the kind of idea and the discussion in the first place, and that your own kind of bias or that your own personal ideas haven't influenced the action that you're taking, and really you're implementing something or you're taking action on something you want to see rather than what the individual discussed in the first place.
I think when an organization, particularly one of the size of co-op with as many colleagues and as many points of view and as many commercial and non-commercial verticals that we operate in, including things like our business units, as well as our community and member engagement efforts, there will be no shortage of ideas in this business. And so one of the challenges is, as we move from idea to execution, making sure that everyone in the organization is clear which ideas are the most important and which ideas we will be moving to execution because they are either strategically imperative or commercially viable or both. And so one of the things that we need to do a much, much better job of is aligning the intent of the organization so it becomes a force multiplier because we're all moving in the same direction. That will allow us to move from idea to execution much more seamlessly because in my view, it's not so much the lack of understanding of the individual idea, it's the multitude of ideas and the inability to prioritize and to align on fewer of them.
As we